This is Chapter 1 from How to Lose Friends and Infuriate Your Boss by Jonah Nader. The chapter is called Who's the Boss? This recording is copyright and can be found at losefriends.com. If a reputable organization offered you a job that is similar to your current job, would you take it? If you decline the offer because you are happy with where you are, would you reconsider if the prospective employer offered to double your salary? You would not be alone if you jumped at the opportunity. Now consider a different question. If you could design a job that fulfills your fantasies, what would that job entail? What would you say if someone offered to give you your dream job but said that you had to halve your current salary? For many people, income loses its importance when it is traded with job satisfaction. Some respondents say that if their dream job existed, they would try to find ways to reduce their living expenses so that they could focus less on their debts and more on their career. This type of question solicits varying responses based on age, maturity, and family commitments. Typically, those who have become disenchanted with the corporate treadmill are more likely to value job satisfaction over wealth accumulation. Many people do not have a clue about how to define their ideal job. Even some of the most senior of executives who are running large organizations have not paused to contemplate what they really want. When someone asks them about what would make them happy, they are unable to articulate what their dream job would look like. How can you find a dream job if you do not know what you are looking for? If you are not sure what you want from a job, this book will help you to build a clear picture of your career. If you are the boss, or if you desire to become the boss, this book will help you to understand which skills will be the most important in the future. If you do not want to be the boss, this book will show you how to become a successful employee who sells services at a premium. It will also show you how you can negotiate better conditions so that you do not suffer the typical ailments of stress and pressure. Killer diseases. Collectively, we entered the 21st century carrying a doctor's certificate. It said, suffering from stress, light duties prescribed. What does it mean to be stressed out? What causes us to feel pressured and overworked and underpaid? Every 10 years or so, we learn about a new wave of occupational hazards. Most recently, public liability has become so expensive that community events have had to be cancelled and small businesses have had to be closed. Exorbitant insurance premiums have been fueled by our litigious society, whose members no longer take responsibility for their own actions, even when walking across a field. Back in the 1990s, employers discovered how costly it could be to handle grievances and emotional damage in relation to sexual harassment and unfair dismissal. In the 1980s, employers refused to believe that repetitive strain injury was a serious ailment. Not until the courts awarded astronomical payouts to victims of soft tissue injury. All of a sudden, ergonomics entered the vernacular. In the 1970s, employers and insurers were learning about back pain and whiplash. For private investigators, business boomed as they spied on unethical workers for whom compensation was another word for get rich quick. Lawyers convinced victims to try their luck, promising no win, no fees. Despite employers' best efforts to appease unions, to placate environmentalists, and to satisfy insurance companies, it seems that our places of work are more dangerous than ever. Stress is the new killer that affects workers' mental and physical health. It destroys both productivity and profitability. Is it conceivable that despite earnest attempts to improve occupational health and safety, we have entered an era in which the greatest threat to our workforce is an ill-defined, intangible disease that emanates from work itself? Could it be that workers are more inclined to suffer from stress because they are uncertain about their future and because they are not passionate about their work? Although we can point to many factors that fuel stress, we must find out what triggers it. In my search to understand the essence of stress, I have come to disagree with popular medical definitions. I define occupational stress as a condition resulting from our inability to reconcile our capability with our authority. This means that stress is ignited when we can see a solution to a major problem and we know that we are capable of fixing that problem, but we have no authority to do so. We are shackled by bureaucracy. Stress leads to frustration, which in turn leads to a debilitating disease called depression. I define depression as a condition resulting from our inability to reconcile our inadequacy with our responsibility. This means that depression consumes us when we realize that we are unable to do anything about our own problems. As a result, we believe that our problems will never go away. Stress test. I have devised a stress test called the elasticity of command. It enables me to determine an individual's propensity to suffer from occupational stress. I draw on the analogy of giving employees a piece of elastic to measure the distance between them and the nearest colleague who can obstruct a project unnecessarily. Employees are then asked to compare that by measuring the distance between them and their commander, the boss, whose responsibility it would be to facilitate a smooth transition for the project. If the boss is reachable and responsive, the stress level is said to be minimal. If the boss is unreachable and unresponsive, the stress level is said to be extreme. Stress becomes frustration when those who can obstruct us are more powerful than our boss. In industries where everything is processed in real time, we must be given the tools to make decisions in real time. Using elasticity of command, we can see that the person who is ultimately responsible for work-related stress is none other than the boss, whether it be our own boss or someone further up the ladder. Bosses, too, can suffer from stress if their superiors are unreachable and unresponsive. It would be convenient to blame globalization or politics or a myriad of external factors for today's stressful work environments. Ultimately, it all boils down to the boss. If you are the boss or aspire to become the boss, it is important to equip yourself with the skills that will be demanded of you in the future. Otherwise, you could perpetuate this problem into the next decade. Imagine yourself on your deathbed. It worries me when an audience nods in agreement with gurus who say, people on their deathbed will not look back and wish that they had spent more time at work. I can safely say that those who show such contempt for their career are in the wrong job. It would be a miserable existence if we could not be absorbed by our work. Work, rest and play ought to be rolled into one lifestyle from which we can derive complete satisfaction. We would not know the meaning of passion if we were not excited enough about our work to think about it on our deathbed. If we enjoy our work, we will feel relaxed and supercharged simultaneously. A successful career is a satisfying journey, not a series of daily pit stops marked by a breather called the weekend. It's easy when you know how. The purpose of this book is to equip you to handle whatever comes hurtling your way. This is important because trouble comes your way without any trouble at all, so you had better know how to confront it and how to overcome it. Prosperity abounds, you just need to know how to claim your fair share. This starts by learning how to lose friends and infuriate your boss so that you can live a zestful and enchanting life.